is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, the research Latin American research professor for the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. He is on the road, but he's helping me understand a story that flashed by, and I've not seen a follow-up. It is immediately threatening, an assassination attempt on the president of Guatemala, Giamate. It happened near the Mexican border, which is even more complicated. And why I was keen on following this story immediately is you will all remember in the early weeks of the Biden administration, the vice president deployed to Guatemala City to meet with President Giamate and talk about the immigration crisis at the American border. At that time, the explanation was the immigrants were driven by narco-terrorism, by bad climate, by poor governance from the Northern Triangle, naming Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Well, it's more than a year later, and the story at the border hasn't improved. But the question about Giamate and the Guatemala government is even more complicated with other appointments and other opinions from Washington. I'm going to concentrate on who was shooting and why. Professor, a very good day to you. Thank you. What is the story of attempting to assassinate Giamate near the Mexican border? And the suggestion in the early reporting was narco-terrorism. Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. It's still not clear the details of who was behind the shooting, but the fact that it occurred in a relatively remote mountainous part of Guatemala near the Mexican border called Huehuetenango really highlights a number of different problems. Guatemala, as you know, has been the focus of a number of different narco trafficking routes, many of which would come through Honduras, sometimes through El Salvador, going up through Mexico. And different groups in Guatemala have controlled different routes. A lot of them went closer to the Pacific coast through a place called San Marcos. But the unique aspect was that the locals that controlled Huehuetenango, a group called the Huistas, actually had the fame back in the invasion by the Zeta cartel into Guatemala in 2008 to 2011 of being one of the few groups who were closed enough in terms of being family clans to actually successfully use their local presence to fight off the Zetas. So these are basically, rather fierce, locally connected people. And so it's also believed now that another Mexican group, the Jalisco Nueva Generación cartel, may be moving in to Huehuetenango in connection with the Huistas. And so the fact that this attempt occurred against President Giamate during a visit to Huehuetenango suggests it has something to do with the unfolding dynamics of the cartels in this often ignored and in very remote part of the country.
To kill the president of the country, does that suggest that the president of the country has launched a campaign against the narco traffickers across the border? Is this a story that's going to grow to include Mexico City? An assassination attempt anywhere is notable, especially given the fragile nature of politics in Colombia and Brazil.
Well, it's not yet clear that this was actually a dedicated attempt to kill Giamate himself. And it also often it's possible that you have scores being settled by one group against another. It was often rumored, for example, back when Otto Perez Molina was president, that he favored one group, the Mendozas, against other groups. And so cooperated with law enforcement against one group while protecting another. And so it's really not clear. This will probably remain limited, but it does indicate that there is something going on. But there's also, as you indicated, the some of the accusations, credible accusations that have been made, concerns that, for example, the Attorney General Consuelo Porras perhaps was protecting some of the narco-affiliated elites, suggests that certainly there it's not that Giamate is launching a universal fight against all narco trafficking in the country. But certainly there are groups with scores to settle in different parts of Guatemala.
And this becomes part of the larger story of the immigration crisis at the American border, at the Mexican border, because you need to cross from Guatemala into Mexico and through Central America. We go to another piece of the story of the Northern Triangle. These three states were said to be a driver for the immigration waves. This is reporting from Los Angeles about a man who wants justice for the murder, the torture and murder of his 17-year-old son by narco-terrorism gangs in El Salvador, supporting the decision by the creative and colorful young president of El Salvador, Mr. Bukele, to make mass arrests. This says 43,000 people have been arrested since the state of emergency. What gang is this? And Bukele is being celebrated in Los Angeles by legal immigrants who say that El Salvador is a threat to all order. Who is the gang, or are there many gangs?
Well, the two principal gangs, of course, Mara Salvatrucha and Barrio 18, and they have different cliques or at a higher level ramfas within them. So it's not clear exactly which of those, but it really highlights two issues. One is the approach to gangs, and also the second is Bukele's authoritarianism. Now, part of the difficulty is really since the late 1990s and early 2000s, as the gangs, which began by being displaced by U.S. immigration officials, Salvadoran youth who had in places like the Rampart District of Los Angeles, who were deported back to El Salvador as well as Guatemala and Honduras, where they really turned to these violent gangs that they'd begun actually in Los Angeles. But so while you can say that the origin of the gang story in Central America has to do with U.S. deportation policy during the 1990s, the problem was that the gang situation has become, you know, so bloody that many of the people who actually have been forced to flee. It wasn't just narco-trafficking or lack of economic opportunity. It was the gangs extorting their businesses, the gangs extorting their homes, threatening to recruit their sons and daughters. And so it's not entirely a surprise that you have the heavy-handed, what's called mano dura against gangs, has a lot of support among Salvadoran immigrants in the United States, because they've really seen what the gangs have done to their own country. And at the same time, Salvador has a very young population, and in many ways, the idea that Bukele is a different politician, and the fact that they don't remember that the mano duro policy, that the gang crackdown, is actually the same policy that actually made the problem worse back when the arena politician Tony Saca did it in the early 2000s. And so, many ways, what you're seeing is this crackdown. It said that 43,000 people have been arrested since March in El Salvador. Maybe 60 people or more have actually died in police custody because the jail conditions are just horrible, at the same time that some gang leaders are being released. And so what it really illustrates actually is that in El Salvador, just about anybody who looks like they could be a gang member could be arrested. And so in some ways, not only is it a testament to the failed mano duro policies, but it's also a testament to the really authoritarian characteristic and political intimidation that Bukele has begun to impose against various parts of the Salvadoran population.
Bukele and the Biden administration. The NBC News report emphasizes that the Biden administration has been extremely unhappy with Bukele since the beginning, having to do with, as you mentioned, abuse and in incarceration. Bukele did not attend the Summit of the Americas, as I recall, in Los Angeles. And he's mentioned that the criticism of his government by the United States is absurd. In the quote that NBC provides, it is clear that the United States government does not accept collaboration, friendship, or alliance. But what you say is these gangs, MS-13 is named as one of them, are in the United States and in El Salvador at the same time. And Bukele's remarks suggest that there's no coordination between the law enforcement in the U.S. and the law enforcement in El Salvador. Is that correct, Professor?
Well, the primary issue with Bukele is that he's upset at not being treated with favoritism by the Biden administration. He feels basically disrespected. And in reality, as we've talked about before on the show, the Biden administration has put particular emphasis on adherence to democratic processes and human rights issues. And so the fact that Bukele has done any number of different things really undermining democratic order in El Salvador, from storming having military personnel enter the Salvadoran Congress, basically to intimidate them into passing a law before his Nueva Ideas party came into Congress, to basically firing five judges and an attorney general that potentially represented a threat to himself and his family, to a range of other things. I mean, Bukele openly calls himself Salvador's coolest dictator. So the Biden administration has certain reasons to be displeased with Bukele. And so Bukele, in many ways, is responding to that. But it is another interesting issue, which is of Salvador's population, roughly 6 million remain in El Salvador, about 2 to 3 million have gone abroad. Most of those are in the United States. And so an enormous portion of El Salvador's population is actually a population in the United States who follows these politics. And so in many ways, when Bukele appeals to Salvadorans, he's appealing to Salvadorans in the United States who actually contribute an enormous amount of remittances to Salvador, which actually become a significant part of the government's revenues as well as the Salvadoran GDP. And so it's ironic that Bukele plays politics with Salvadorians in places like Greater Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, as much as he plays politics with the Salvadorians in his own country.
It occurs to me to say, Professor, that when you're dealing with the Northern Triangle, you can't hope to get an Elliot Ness to cooperate with you. You've got to deal with what the terms of the engagement. And we mentioned Guatemala City and the complications of narco-terrorism and possibly links to the assassination attempt. Now we're dealing with Bukele, who is colorful and uncalculated. We now move to Honduras, the third member. And I don't have anything negative to say here other than I'm puzzled. Suddenly the entertainment is of joining Bitcoin in some fashion. Honduras seems set to follow the footsteps of El Salvador, goes the report, allowing its residents to make payments in cryptocurrencies. Honduras recently launched a program called Bitcoin Valley, under which it will teach around 60 businesses in Santa Lucia about how to adopt cryptocurrencies. Last time I checked, Honduras is led by President Castro, who is a relative wife connected to a previous administration. Otherwise, it's non-transparent to me. Why the Bitcoin move? It's going to grab headlines given the tattered condition of cryptocurrency right now.
This is a puzzling development, John. First of all, it does not appear that what the Castro government is proposing is of the same nature as what Bukele did, basically making Bitcoin the official national currency, or at least a national currency in El Salvador, with reserves held in Bitcoin and things like that, in ways that, as the IMF pointed out, could actually jeopardize the stability of the banking in a financial system as much as advancing corruption. It appears that what's going on in Santa Lucia is something more limited, basically the allowing and the facilitating of Bitcoin, but without promoting it at a national level. Now, it is curious because Xiomara Castro's Libre government is more of a left-of-center government, and actually some of the special economic zones where this will be permitted are the same special economic zones that Castro and Libre has pledged to abolish, as I understand it. And so what's afoot here is not entirely clear, but it does appear that there is an experiment to at least allow what is perceived as part of the new digital economy to prosper. And it may suggest that just with the very severe problems in attracting investment in Honduras, that there's a desire to try something new, which may or may not be a good idea.
Professor Evan Ellis, Latin American Research Professor, U.S. Army War College, Strategic Studies Institute, a tour through the Northern Triangle, no problems solved, many mysteries raised. We're headed now to Ecuador, where there's violence, car bombs, massacres, bodies hanging from bridges. And this is the good side of the CBS News Report. I'm John Batchelor.